99 Jams, Community Matters, hosted by your girl, Super Cindy. Good morning, everyone. Live in the studio, I have Sabrina Fulton, president of the Trayvon Martin Foundation. Good morning, Sabrina.
Good morning.
So this is an amazing experience right now because you are my first guest of my first Community Matters show. So I'm honored to have you here this morning.
Thanks for inviting me.
So what I wanted to focus on, because your organization does so much, so we're going to go start from the beginning of how everything came about. But I also want to discuss after the cameras are gone, because your son's death and his court case and everything was just like the biggest thing on every news channel, every outlet, African-American TV, white American TV. It doesn't matter. The topic was discussed. So I want to dig a little bit deeper in all of that. And then also highlight all the amazing things that the Trayvon Martin Foundation is doing, not just in South Florida, but across the country.
Right.
So first of all, when you first found out the tragedy of what happened to your son, where were you? How did you, what was the story of how you found out?
Do you know we have a book out?
Yes.
Okay, it's Rest in Power. Yes. All of that information is in the book. But
oh, so we want to keep them wanting the book.
Oh, yes, we want to keep them wanting the book. It's Rest in Power, the Trayvon Martin story, because so many people wrote books and articles and did interviews about Trayvon, and they didn't even know him. So this
exactly.
is told from the parents' point of view. So, but let me just back up for a moment. Mm-hmm. I found out while I was at work. I was actually at work, and Tracy called me the next morning.
Wow.
When he found out from the police in Sanford that they had a photo that they showed Tracy. And once they showed that photo to Tracy, Tracy got on the phone and called me.
So did you immediately drive up to Sanford? Like, how did it work? Like, you had to go up there? Or
no, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. I did not. I told myself that I was not going to Sanford. I mm-hmm. did not want to see the area. I didn't want to see the people. I didn't want to see the makeshift. You know, they usually have a little area where they have flowers and stuff. I didn't want to see that, because it would have just been bad feelings for me. And Trayvon was my youngest son, you know, so he's a mama's boy. He's a mama's boy. And I just didn't want to see that. So I told Tracy to handle everything and ship the body back to Miami, and we'll have a homegoing service for him. A few days later, and they knew who had shot and killed Trayvon. He still had the gun. He was still at the scene. All of those things,
and
so
free.
We still decided to get an attorney, but we was under the impression that they were going to arrest him. And then I think I was at a restaurant with some family members when I got a call from attorney Ben Crump and Tracy to tell me that they were not going to arrest him because of the Stand Your Ground law. I think it was about 5 something at that time. By 8 o'clock, I was on the road headed to Sanford, because I just felt like that's just so unfair. How do you know all of these things about this case and still you're not going to arrest the person who has shot and killed Trayvon?
I think the media, what I can recall, started getting information about the story when you and Tracy realized that the killer was not going to go to jail immediately. And that's when the word started spreading. And that's when the awareness of everyone across the country, the outrage was like, what's going on? And there's so many things about that Florida Stand Your Ground law and so many people fighting against it, because people use it so sparingly, at a drop of a dime, and they don't really care what the law is about. They've turned it and twisted it into so many other things because it's such a broad law.
Well, one of the things is the law is not applied fairly.
Mm-hmm.
So the law reads the same for everybody, but it depends on who's reading it as far as how it's applied.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's too vague. It's too many gray areas, and it's left up to the person's interpretation about how they apply the law. The other thing is the law does not work for African Americans. And so other people use the Stand Your Ground law in their success. Successful when it works for them, but it does not work for us.
Exactly. So when finally the trial started, did you realize how much of an impact it was making on the African-American community and just in general, like white and black people were supporting the whole trial because they were protesting. It just started a lot of conversation on racial profiling. Were you aware at the time of everything, or you were in basically the bubble trying to focus on your son's trial?
I absolutely was in a bubble. Like, we did not know how many people were supporting the movement during the time. The reason why we even went to Sanford is because we felt like they were going to sweep Trayvon's death under the rug, and we didn't want that to happen. And so I felt that my son was not here to speak for himself, so I needed to speak for my son. And so I continued to be the voice for Trayvon Martin and other Trayvon Martins. But I did not want to go to Sanford, but the reason why I did go, like I said, was because they said that they were not going to arrest the killer of Trayvon. And so we went to Sanford, and, you know, we were not welcome there. And they did not want us to discuss this, our case. They didn't want us to talk about it. They didn't want us to bring attention to it. They wanted us to go back home and just forget about it. And we could not. We could not do that. And so it was the colleges and universities that actually got the word out. There were so many people with hoodies on, and they was posting pictures with hoodies, but it started with the colleges and the university, our young people. And that's why I believe that all of this change that has to be made, it's going to start with our young people, because a lot of times the older people are set in their ways, and they feel like this is how it's been and this is how it will be. But our young people are not having it. Our young people are saying, we're going to make change. And so I'm a supporter of young people, because they have bright minds, they are intelligent, and they want to make change. But I just feel like we never knew the impact. We never knew how many people were in support of until we started doing some media, we started doing some interviews. And one of the interviews we had was on Politics Nation with Reverend Al Sharpton.
Okay.
And he told us about a million hoodie march that we had never even heard of it. And he said they're having a million hoodie march at Union Square. And we were in New York at the time. And he said that you guys need to go by and just say thank you to the people. And so that's what we did. It was our last stop. We had been interviewing all day, and we felt that we were going to go there and just say thank you to a couple of hundred people. When we got there, we had like police escorts. It was so many people out there at Union Square. I mean, we never saw the street. It was just so many people, with thousands and thousands and thousands of people, that in 2 days they had galvanized all of these people and got the word out about a million hoodie march. And so when we got there, I was under the weather. I had a little cold, and I was sniffling and everything. And I was like, I don't know what to say, you know, because that was my first, literally, that was my first march. And they were like, just say, Crump and Tracy said, just say thank you. Just tell the people thank you. And so I was sniffling and everything, and I was already cold from Miami.
Hello, we don't adjust well with that. Our kneecaps can't adjust.
And so I started speaking, and I just told them, I said, you know, I thanked them for coming out, and I told them one thing that did carry on, and I said that Trayvon Martin is my son, but he's also your child too. And that was an important moment in time, and people kind of understood that, listen, Trayvon could have been my son. And so that's why I think the message is, it really wasn't about Trayvon. For us, it was about our son.
Yeah.
But then when so many people heard about what was happening, they thought about their children as well. They thought about their nieces, their nephews, their cousins, you know, and family members. And they understood that this could have happened to anybody's child.
At the time, President Obama was in office, and during a press conference, they asked him about, you know, the incident with Trayvon Martin. And he said, Trayvon Martin could have been my son. That also made so many people exactly feel what you're saying, that it could have happened to anyone walking from the store. And also, Trayvon, the picture of Trayvon with the hoodie on became the face of people's struggle and people's like protesting of how they wanted to be heard and their outrage and everything. So when you see, you know, people, and you at that time saw pictures of your son and everyone doing artistry and painting him in murals and walls and all of that, did that help or was it harder because you saw his image everywhere? Like, does that...
Even now, it depends on what mood I'm in.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of times, like, even when I go to, like, the mall, people walk up to me and they talk about my son, and that's probably the last thing that you need to talk to me about because I live it every single day. It's in my heart every single day. Every time my heart beats, I think about Trayvon and Javaris, you know? And so, you know, I guess people, you know, want to show their support. So they constantly remind me of my son. And I think that it is, at times it could be hurtful, you know, but at other times it could be overwhelming. And I'm, you know, thinking that they are still, you know, supporting. They're still with us. They're still praying for us. They're still standing with us. And so it could be a good thing, but just like with anything else, you know, I'm human, you know, and I tell people all the time, I'm just an average mom, you know. And so I have my good days and I have my bad days, and I try to stay home on my bad days.
Yeah.
But sometimes I can't come out, you know, because people may want to take pictures, or they may want to just talk to me about their case, or maybe they talk to me about their case that they're going through now. And sometimes I just can't do it because my spirit, my inner being won't allow me to, because for the compassion that I have for them.
You were basically forced to become a voice for a movement that you wanted no part of, this club of parents who have lost their child. And you have been forced and put in a place that you have to be the voice of this very difficult battle, because it is an uphill battle. And so I agree with what you're saying, that sometimes you're human. So to be forced, their intentions are good. So many people have love for you without even personally knowing you, but they feel the pain of what has happened and they relate to it because it's happening in so many communities. It's not just South Florida, not just Sanford, not New York, Chicago. It's everywhere. So that's why so many people were relatable to what had happened. And then so many children this year alone, young people in South Florida, are dying because of gun violence. The Trayvon Martin Foundation and yourself, you're asked to speak at a lot of events regarding gun violence. And even though it's black on black crime sometimes, or teens on teens, do you think that gun violence is just in general a main problem? Because your situation with Trayvon was the Stand Your Ground law, but what about just the gun violence in general across the board?
I think we are in a lot of trouble. We're in turmoil. The country is in a disaster right now. I mean, when you have people that don't feel safe walking down the street in their own community. My son was 17 years old. You know, who is somebody to walk up to him to question where he was going or who he was, you know? And then the fact that Trayvon was unarmed, is so much hate in the world that you wanted to hurt him, you wanted to harm him, you wanted to shoot him and kill him, you know? And then we have laws in place that allow you to get away with those things, called Stand Your Ground. And we have seen different incidents on television with our own two eyes, like the Eric Garner case.
Yeah.
And they told you that he was not in a chokehold, that was the seatbelt maneuver. But, I mean, I've been living a long time, and that's pretty much looked like a chokehold.
We watched wrestling, and we saw.
And it was. And unfortunately, Trayvon didn't have a video, but even on the video, you still can't prove when it has to do with an African-American. You still can't prove it even with a video. You had the case in South Carolina or North Carolina. where the young man was running away
from the police officer
and clearly was shot in the back. Clearly he was shot in the back. Mm-hmm. And our officers, a lot of officers are just saying they fear for their life. Well, what's going to happen when African-Americans start saying that they fear for their life? And
well,
we do.
The same rules pertain.
Right. And so I just think that so many people can relate to what happened with Trayvon because it continues to happen. You know, it wasn't the first case. It hasn't been the last case. And we just have to continue to fight. But we can't just look at things and figure we'll like them on social media and we'll share them on social media and we just are notified by social media. We have to do something. We have to get up. We have to join a nonprofit organization. And it's okay if it's the Trayvon Martins or it's another one, but we have to join a nonprofit organization and we have to lend our talent to that organization. We have to lend our time to that organization. And we might have to lend our funds to that organization.
Exactly.
Because those nonprofit organizations cannot continue to do the work unless they're supported by people who believe in what they're doing and in the cause and the purpose. A lot of times people say, well, I support breast cancer, but what are you doing to support breast cancer? You can't support breast cancer at home.
And
you
just gotta wear a pink ribbon.
Yeah, right. And wear your pink shirt once a month in October. No, you have to continue to do things that support what you believe in. And so that's what I think that we have to work on this year is really getting people to support things that they believe in, to try to make a difference, to try to make an impact so that we can make things better. Other than that, things are going to remain the same.
So when the trial started, I'm not sure how this works, but when the trial started, did you and Tracy have, did you guys communicate a lot with the prosecution, like the prosecutors? Like, were you allowed to communicate? Did they keep you updated on what was going on their end of the trial?
I just have to say that was my first trial ever. Mm-hmm. I have never sat through a trial, and to sit through the trial, you know, everybody was like, oh, it's Trayvon Martin's trial. No, Trayvon was dead and gone. It was the trial of the person who shot and killed Trayvon. And just to be sitting in the same courtroom with that person, I think that's one slap in the face, you know. But
when they were talking negatively about Trayvon and you having to sit, like, were you communicating with the prosecution and getting updates?
We were getting updates, but it was a lot of things that we did not know and that actually came out during during the trial. Things came up that we didn't know. We didn't know what was going to happen that particular day. You know, if it was something that they thought that we should know about, like medical examiner's photos, like the 911 tapes, it was certain things that they would tell us, this may come out today. You might hear this today. You might see this today. And so, but most of it, we did not know exactly what was going to happen that day. We just basically had to listen and watch just like everybody else did to everything that played out.
And everything was televised. Everyone was watching. Everyone on Twitter, social media, everything was commenting and expressing their feelings. So the day the verdict was read and after you got that verdict, where did you go? Did you come back to Miami? How did you get out of the courtroom? And
the courtroom, I think they closing arguments were about that Friday. And they gave us a holding room and we were all waiting in the holding room and they wanted us to stay there because if they had any questions, they wanted us to be available to answer those questions. So they wanted us to stay there. I didn't feel the same way that they felt that I needed to stay there. I didn't have a good feeling. I felt my body just did not feel right being there. I didn't like the smell in there. I didn't like the, everything in there was wrong. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't able to stay there. It was literally making me sick. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I cannot stay here. I'm not going to stay here. I have to leave. And so the attorneys, everybody was saying, no, you have to stay. You have to stay. You have to stay. I said, Listen, if I have to go find a flight or catch a cab or catch an Uber, I'm out of here. And I meant that because the feeling that I had, I cannot explain it, but the feeling that I had was like, leave and leave now.
My gut
feeling was like, you need to leave. And so I told, my mom was there, Tracy was there, our attorneys was there, and I was like, listen, I'm not staying here. Whatever question that they have, they need to figure that out. They need to ask somebody else. I'm not staying here. And so we packed up our things, and we went back to Miami, and that was on a Friday, and then the verdict came out on Saturday. I was at my sister's house. We watched it on TV. Mm. I was in disbelief. Even though they said the verdict, it just didn't register in your head. I didn't feel like it was the end. Like, that was it. That's it.
And that's...
You know, and we, you know, we remained, like, quiet for a couple of days. I needed to get, you know, things right on with my thinking spiritually. And so I didn't speak to anybody for a few days. I did go to church because I felt like I was broken and I needed to, that church life to lift me back up. And I did go to church, but I did not speak to anyone about how I felt about the verdict.
Do you think like the drive that you have for the Trayvon Martin Foundation and to get the message out and get the word out would be the same drive you have now if the verdict was different?
It would not have been. And for some reason, people think that just because the killer goes to jail, that
everything's all good
and you've got your justice. No, you don't really have your justice because you don't have your child back.
Yeah.
I think I would have felt better if he had gone to jail.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I would be fighting as hard if he had gone to jail, because I would feel like some of those people feel like, okay, we've gotten our justice, but at the end of the day, my son is still not here. You know, you'll have a person in jail, but my son is still missing out of my life and my family's life. And, you know, and I think about that. I think about the drive that I have and why I have it. And I have it because my son is not here to speak for himself. And so that's my drive. I have no other motives. I have no other focus. That's my drive. And it's been my drive since day one, you know, and I managed to stay focused on what I need to do. That verdict, I decided was not going to be the deciding factor about who Trayvon Martin was, you know. And so we decided to create and do things with the Trayvon Martin Foundation to create a legacy for Trayvon, because we wanted to be the people who said who Trayvon Martin was.
So previously you said how, you know, the older activists, they see things as the fight, how to express the fight a different way. So you talked about how the youth, we have to have peers educating the youth in their battle now more so. And the Trayvon Martin Foundation helps a lot of youth and has a lot of youth representatives of the Trayvon Martin Foundation. So how do you think the youth impact the youth compared to an older activist from the 60s talking to the youth?
Well, things for us that impact us, like Reverend Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, and, you know, Mark Marielle and people like that who impact us, it's because of our age. And so sometimes you need to have a young person to talk to a young person, because young people inspire young people, you know. And so we know that concept. We used to have this thing on our website where it was Student of the Week.
And we all wanted to be on it.
Right. We had a young people interviewing a young person because they like to see that. That's something that inspires them. And so we want to make sure that we are inspiring them and they're inspiring each other. And so that was very important to us. And we're probably going to get back to the Student of the Week. But we like to, I personally like to hang around young people.
Yeah, you know, keep you youthful listening to what they're talking about. Yes,
absolutely. I like to listen to
what
they're talking about.
It's funny. It's serious. It's, yeah.
You know, I have a 5-year-old niece, and she keeps me on my toes, and she wants me to do what she does, and she doesn't understand that I'm 50, but she wants me to do a cockwheel. And so when I do one, she say, "No, no, no."
That's not how to do it.
Oh, she's hilarious. But, you know, I just like young people. I like to talk to them and hear what they're thinking. What happened in school today? Yeah. So what she tells me happened in school might be something different, but that's her perception of what happened.
Her perspective of everything.
And so, our young people gonna rule the world.
So we're here, Community Matters, speaking to Sabrina Fulton, and we're coming up next. I want to speak about the Trayvon Martin Foundation and all the amazing things that you're doing across the country, all your programs, uniting with Florida Memorial. They gave Trayvon his own center, is it, or what?
Degree.
Yeah, they gave him a degree, so because he would have been graduating. So we're going to come back and speak more to Sabrina Fulton.